Would you say that we should vote for 2016 Donald Trump because his first term was better than his second term?
That was the easiest no-brainer of the world. If somebody was like, should we vote for if the two candidates were Donald Trump first term or Donald Trump second term? I'm literally tripping over myself and I'm making every single illegal immigrant I know run to the polling places to vote for Donald Trump first term. What an unbelievably fucking retarded question.
It's such a stupid. I wonder if Shaver has, if Contra has the same thoughts I was going to say. Why the fuck? What am I even having to explain right now? That an elected mayor don't have the luxury of attacking every single fucking person in the country that you think isn't as ideological peer as you because you're trying to fucking run your constituency. You're trying to run your, you know, whatever you're elected to govern. Like, it's such an obviously.
Okay. Do I have more leverage against Kamala Harris before she's elected or once she's president for 4 years?
Well, in the sense, I mean, I see what you're saying, like as like a protest voter threat, but
it really depends on what exactly you're talking about. Like, that's such a one-dimensional. I hate how she smugly smiles because she knows she's fucking lying to the audience and she's selling it well. Like, well, I don't know. Is there any pressure on Donald Trump right now who's not only already elected president, but he's a lame duck president, so he's even in his second term? Like, you don't think there's any pressure on the president when midterms are coming up or in preparation for the next election? You don't think there's any pressure on the president to steer the economy or foreign policy or whatever else in a certain direction because he sees that his party is about to get fucking eviscerated? Like, of course you can still pressure people once they're through their elected terms, especially the president. Like, this is such a stupid, this is such a nonsense argument. Whatever.
The energy is so oppositional.
Let's talk about leverage.
Okay.
Do I have more leverage against Kamala Harris before she's elected or once she's president for 4 years?
Kilo is crying in Queeman's Discord because his views are so low despite getting shouted out by Hassan twice. LOL. Nice.
Protest voters are sort of unwinnable, are sort of like never happy, right? Whereas there are like centrist median voters that are more winnable.
True. How has that been panning out?
If the Democrats pivot to the far left, that there's this like available
the far left
base. Well, by Democratic Party standards.
Is not supporting a genocide as far left?
By Democratic Party standards.
Oh my God.
Well, isn't that quite the admission?
Okay, I mean,
do you see why the genocide conversation is so brain dead? Like, this is the whole point of it. This is what they would try to do. Is it's such a brain dead conversation.
So I joke about like how we vote for Satan to stop Donald Trump. There probably is a line. I've yet not found it yet of like what like moral depth to which I would stoop to stop Donald Trump.
So what does that mean?
Yeah.
So I'm here with Natalie Nguyen, aka ContraPoints, who is one of the biggest and most prolific and I think most efficacious video essayists on the left in BreadTube. I don't know if you embrace that term.
But it's really nice to be.
You condemn the term BreadTube. Why is that?
Well, I had never thought it made any sense. Like, I mean, the phrase BreadTube is a reference to the conquest of bread, an anarchist book. I'm not an anarchist. I don't know why this, like, framing has been imposed on. But, you know, it is what it is. You don't get to choose these things.
How do you identify politically?
I identify as, like, a left liberal at this stage is how I would describe myself. I would say that I'm aligned with, like, the left wing of the Democratic Party, like AOC kind of politics.
Well, AOC, at least at one point in her life, self-described as a socialist or a democratic socialist, at
that's
least,
right.
Did she not?
Yes, that's right.
Would you define yourself that way as well?
Wow.
I think I would at one time also have. I think now I would say I'm probably more of a social democrat. But for me, my attitude towards politics is it's very non-philosophical in a way, because I feel that I react to the situation that I'm in. So I think that, you know, am I a social democrat in the sense that I think capitalism is like this amazing system? Like, no, not really. I just think that social democracy is like the most plausible path to improving what we have. If I like found myself in, I don't know, a Stalinist country, I probably would not be advocating capitalist revolution. I would be advocating like, you know, well, I don't know, some kind of like Dengist reforms or something.
So, I mean, from my perspective, you know, someone who's obviously been a witness to some of the backlash and at least your career over the last, you know, 5 or 6 years when I've been more plugged into the online left, it does feel sometimes like some of the pushback you get is because there's a gap in your perceived sort of identification or self-identification, at least at one point, in some of the political stances that you take maybe in a post-2020 world. Does that feel right to you?
Yeah, I do think there is like a definite proportion of the backlash that I receive that's based on a kind of misreading of me as being sort of having always been more radical than I really was. I mean, I think that part of it is like the aesthetic of what I, because I started out doing, you know, I'm like this like transgender YouTuber who is making videos about how fascism is bad. This is very like communist coded behavior, you know, at least on in like internet culture, right? Like, is if you're a trans person on the internet, you're complaining about Nazis all day, you're probably a communist, right? And that's true. You are probably a communist if you fit that description. I mean, I think that I kind of did have a more, so I mean, I used to be quite centrist in that, like in 2016, I think I was initially, I was like a Hillary Clinton supporter in the 2016 primary for the reason that I thought that she was more viable than Bernie Sanders. Then she lost. And I think that did prompt me to rethink a little bit what was possible, combined with the fact that Donald Trump at the time seemed like this kind of crackpot candidate who, how could a serious country elect a person like this, right? Well, joke's on me. But like, I think that did make me open-minded to like, well, like maybe like it is time to consider, because I had, you know, I had campaigned for Obama in 2012. And so my experience was like talking to these like median voters in like Ashburn, Virginia or whatever. And like the amount of effort needed to convince them that actually giving people access to healthcare, even if they have a pre-existing condition, did not amount to a totalitarian Islamic socialist takeover of the government. Like, it made me think, like, okay, everyone just hates the word socialism so much, like, why bother? But then, I don't know. I guess I questioned if maybe that was. So I think I was experimenting a bit more in that era, and also I did get audience captured somewhat, I think, because I had a much more leftist audience. But I think we've clashed over that, over my, like, I suppose, like, more pragmatic, moderate stances on things.
I want to come back to this issue of pragmatism, but I want to say that on some level, I empathize with having the notion, especially coming, you know, as someone who's, you know, part of a marginalized group whose interests don't necessarily drive politics and sometimes drive people away from my politics, right? You know, that I remember in 2007 being asked by like an adult, you know, coming straight out of college, asked by an adult, you know, who I supported in the primary, not really knowing anything about Barack Obama and kind of having the knee-jerk reaction that I should say Clinton because I would be perceived as doing witch casting if I said Obama, or it was expected because I'm Black that I would say Obama, and that it was so unlikely that I seemed like the pragmatic person to say Hillary Clinton. And then I had a similar experience over the course, you know, of the primary when Hillary Clinton revealed herself in various ways and frankly actively talked me out of her support. And then by the time 2016 came around...
None of that ever happened. I don't believe it.
I also wanted to validate that, you know, many Black voters did not think that Barack Obama could win and did not align behind him until after he had won Iowa and demonstrated his viability with white voters, right? So, like, I think there's something very relatable about your approach. I think the question people have is, once this lesson was learned in 2016, that who we were told was electable wasn't who was actually electable, and that there was this appetite in the country for somebody that was more radical, that was more anti-establishment in the form of Donald Trump. And that there was this phenomenon of the Bernie to Trump voter where those same Trump voters would have been interested in someone like Bernie Sanders, who didn't just, you know, talk about healthcare the way that Obama did, but did so in a much more radical way, in a way that was thought to be somehow alienating to the public, but which was in fact populist. If that lesson was learned in 2016, I guess the question people have is, what caused you to sort of move back to this idea that more centrist pragmatism or incrementalism was going to be a more electable and politically viable route?
Well, I think part of it is, so in 2020, I supported Bernie Sanders in the primary.
I remember. And we talked about it on the show, I think.
Oh, maybe we did. Okay, so it hasn't been 10 years. Okay, but I Biden won fairly decisively, both in the primary and the general election, which seemed like a kind of step back from the edge to me. I think that kind of pushed me in a more moderate direction, also as a result of, I think, clashing with people who were abstainers. I felt that, like, because I've always seen Donald Trump as, like, very menacing, like, as, like, a nightmarish presence in American politics, who I am, like, willing to resist by any means necessary, essentially.
Careful.
And so I think that I got frustrated with the... opposition to voting for Biden. And then in 2024, I think my frustration increased. And I feel like now, I mean, I see the second Trump administration as being like even worse than the first, which I thought it would be. So I feel like fairly disillusioned with any kind of like larger ideological project. I mean, I guess we could probably spend all day litigating like why exactly Kamala Harris lost in 2024 by the margins that she did. But the way I diagnose it is largely that like voters moved to the right. So this has me feeling probably the way that liberals felt, you know, around in like 1991 or whatever, when you had like almost 12 years of like Reaganism at that point. And it's just like, well, my sense of, I mean, so there's a reason why I'm not like a Democratic Party press.
Hodge's reaction to this had him saying he got Taylor Lorenz vibes from Breonna Joy Gray. I don't think Breonna Joy Gray is quite that like psychologically manipulative like Taylor Lorenz is, but Breonna Joy Gray is absolutely a demon menace terrorist who is like an unapologetic accelerationist tanky who would burn the entire country to the ground just to see some socialist fucking dipshit who will lose an election by 50 points win a Democratic primary.
Person, right? Because my messaging is not inspiring at all. Like, I'm aware of this. And like, to be clear, no politician should say the things that I'm saying because they're not inspiring. They're depressing. That's why I'm not a politician, right? Because I don't have an inspiring message. And you need, like, I mean, I feel like the politicians that I've seen in my life who have the best messaging are people like Barack Obama and like Zoran Mamdani, who
both... They all hate Barack Obama now. Remember that, okay? Careful.
Have this kind of like radiant...
moderate centrist, not a socialist, whatever.
Energy of hope. That is, you know, almost more than any specific policy idea. It's the kind of vibes that they have. I do not possess this quality at all.
Okay. But that phrase, like almost more than any specific policy idea, I think that's where the rub comes in and where I see the frustration that some of the left articulates toward you, not just you, but anybody who takes a more who believes authentically that a more moderate position is the more electable, sort of smarter, politically advantageous one. Because many of us look at Zoran Mamdani and even Barack Obama in 2008, and I would also say Bernie Sanders in 2016 and 2020, and say that he was able to, these people were all able to snatch movements out of nowhere, right? Obama was not the likely choice. Senator Sanders didn't even seem to even believe his own campaign was going to have legs when he launched in like the middle of the grass with like three cameras around in 2016. And obviously Zoran Mamdani was polling in single digits in a long shot, at least when I interviewed him last February. But I would argue that what propelled all of those individuals into the limelight was not their moderation, but that they stood out among a crowd of moderates who were unwilling to make true criticisms about their own party and the other side and the ways in which they are often aligned along because of their shared corporate donors and maintaining substantially the status quo. That to me is what so many of us learned from 2016 and what Bernie's greatest sort of gift and contribution to the political space was, that calling out corporate elites, calling out the Epstein class, calling out super PAC donors, calling out the military industrial complex is not something that will get you marginalized and sidelined, but in fact will earn the trust of the public at large. What do you say to that argument? That in fact, the people that you were sort of characterizing as successful because of their, you know, the person, I don't want to mischaracterize, you put words in your mouth, the charisma, personality, you know, intangibles, in fact, are popular because it is message driven, it's policy driven.
Well, it's definitely a combination. Like, I don't think you can have any policy and win based on vibes. And I agree with what you're saying about like, populism is very in at the moment, right? And I do think that type of messaging could succeed. I mean, I see like, the place to litigate this will be in the primary, right?
We didn't get to have one, regrettably.
Not in 2024. And I do think it's reprehensible that Biden did not drop out sooner.
I mean, again, this is a hard call, guys. Like, Jesus.
And there are people who I have to say.
I guarantee you, if Biden would have dropped out immediately, people would have been like, "Do you see? This is why we should have ran him. He's an incumbent. It's fucking retarded."
Well, no, the people that hated Biden, most of the people that are lodging these complaints about Biden dropping out too late or whatever else, nothing actually mattered. What they really wanted was they wanted him to drop out earlier because they thought that would have increased the chances of them having a primary so that they could have got some type of socialist figure in. And if the socialist figure wouldn't have gotten in, if they would have had a primary, they would have accused the mainstream Democrats of rigging it or something. Yeah, so it's, yeah.
I know I've heard you and Joshua Citarella recently seem to agree that 2020 was a fair race and that the rigging that happened in 2016 of the Bernie campaign was overstated.
Rigging?
But it's worth noting. Yeah, it's worth noting that people fare very differently. And even centrists like Jake Tapper and his book with
Nice.
Alex Thompson readily acknowledge that 2016 was rigged, that there was a call that went out that had all the candidates drop out after Biden had declined, had failed to win the first four contests and circle the wagons around candidates drop out, that 2016 was rigged, that there was a call that went out that had all the candidates drop out after Biden had declined, had failed to win the first four contests and circle the wagons around South Carolina, that, of course, there was, what, $70 million of free media that Biden got after winning South Carolina, that they then changed the order of the primary contest so that a pro-Biden state could go early enough so that they wouldn't have to do quite the same level of machination. But that, again, you had a mass dropping out and coalescing behind a candidate.
Like, that was always
These people are crazy.
Happen. Like, this is pretty standard. Like, this happened with Trump, right? Like, in the first term, Rubio was a candidate against him. I'm trying to remember who all the cabinet people were. There were so many people that ran for office.
In his first term?
I'm trying to, yeah, for those primaries, there were like 10 different people on stage. I don't remember.
Rubio, Cruz.
I don't remember if in the first term, if those people actually, if any of those made it into the cabinet or not.
Ben Carson? Was that the guy
named? Yeah.
Yeah.
Was Carson ever in the cabinet?
Carson, I think, was his health duder. Rubio wasn't in the cabinet, no.
Not the first time. Okay.
Not the first term.
Yeah, this idea that, like, these people dropped out and then they got cabinet positions, like, well, they weren't going to win the election. Like, they knew they weren't going to win the primary. But so people like Brandon Joy Gray, these are all, like, the most retarded, sloppiest talking points where they're like, they should have all stayed in indefinitely because Bernie could never pull more than 25-30%. But if all the other centrists all stayed in and they all competed with one another, then Bernie could win. Just fucking retarded.
In order to make it seem as though there's an inevitability there with Joe Biden that there simply wasn't. Sorry, I'm totally kind of two stories at the same time with 2016 and 2020. But, you know, that was a 2020 story. And in 2016, yes, it was a much more acute. And the Democratic Party, of course, the DNC admitted that they were entitled to and did, in fact, put their finger on the scale in favor of Hillary Clinton. So it does beg the question by some accounts, and I don't expect you to, you know, agree with this, but I do have to just put out there, by some accounts, we haven't had a real primary since 2008.
I see rigging as too strong a word for what you're describing. I think that, you know, yes, Joe Biden and Hillary Clinton were, like, some advantage was given to them by having this built up institutional support within the party. But I also think that, like, but like in 2020, when you say that, like, okay, there's this sort of conspiracy of candidates to all drop out, except for Biden, giving him this advantage that he wouldn't otherwise have had against Bernie Sanders. Like, yes, but I feel like that also contains, like, a tacit admission that the only way for Bernie Sanders to have...
Exactly, to win is if everybody would have stayed in maximally to the very end. Yep.
One would be to split the center-left vote.
Oh, I agree. So I think that that is true, and that is also how Donald Trump won, right? Donald Trump, the Republicans did not do that same thing in 2016, and he was able to win. He has never had a supermajority of the majority of a primary vote in that exact same way. So I think if we were having a different kind of...
But it wasn't until... Like, first of all, there were people that dropped out fairly early when they realized there was no path forward. But I'm pretty sure it was a pretty brutal, bitter fight between Trump. Was it Trump, Rubio, Cruz, and Kasich? Kasich?
That is who it was. It was Kasich.
Yeah, it was a fairly brutal fight. And Trump came into this very, very, very unpopular. But then he grew in popularity through the primary process. The idea that, like, these situations are not comparable.
Conversation. I absolutely put it on Bernie Sanders in the campaign to have anticipated this outcome and to have done the work that needed to be done, that even if the Democratic centrists maneuver the way that they did and were expected to maneuver, he would still be able to win. And that's on him. That's, you know, at the end of the day, that was the responsibility of the campaign.
Putting more effort to win in South Carolina and so on.
Well, I don't think that Bernie had to win South Carolina to win. I think that in some levels, the uphill battle, the frustration is that, you know, Biden loses the first, what, four contests. Dramatically, right? It's like fourth or fifth place in New Hampshire or whatever it was. And a world where the media was fair would have covered Bernie's win in Nevada as
20, right?
Yes.
He didn't run in the other one, right?
Huge electability, proof of electability, given that he won 70% of the Latino vote. And he would have gotten that huge media boost in the polls after that win and all of the other wins in those early contests. But you can imagine that even if others didn't drop out, if the media continues to ring the alarm bells that Bernie isn't electable because of socialism and Biden is because of black people, that he might still even be able to carry the day the same way in 2016, those same arguments where we made about
Biden's
Hillary Clinton,
ass,
which were fundamentally untrue, right? As you just explained.
But I guess I wonder, like, how, I question, like, how, just how, I mean, I'm sure it has some effect, but how much does the media sort of framing a candidate as unelectable affect that?
Like, this is so cringe. Like, she's pretending that if the media would have just been a little bit nicer towards Bernie, that he would have had some massive upswing in popularity. Like, the media coverage of Bernie did get a bit friendlier when he started to get more popular. I remember this because I would point it out all the fucking time. But, like, this idea that he just needed the media on its own to carry his campaign is such a weak admission of the weakness of the candidate. Because, like, Donald Trump had the media against him on the Republican side literally since the start of everything. And remember the excuse that all these people give and everybody gives is that, like, well, it was still free media. It was, he was getting so much free media because they covered him in his gaffes all the time. And I was like, okay, but when they covered Bernie's, that didn't count as free media? What is this stupid mechanic that's happening that's hitting this guy at the start of the turn and then he burrows immediately? I can't fucking kill him!
Actual voting choices of primary voters.
Well, Natalie, you said that you thought that Hillary Clinton was more electable than Bernie in 2016, right? And you're a very informed and savvy person. And yet every single poll from that election cycle showed that Bernie averaged 10 points up on Hillary Clinton, on Donald Trump, while Hillary Clinton never got out of the margin of error over Donald Trump. And in some ways, her loss to him was perfectly anticipated by the polls.
But not by the primary votes.
Right. But I mean, this is the thing. This is what's so interesting about that black voter example we gave in the beginning about how Black voters didn't get behind Barack Obama until they believed he was electable, which means, you know, that white people would vote for him, which is why the Iowa contest was so important for Obama, right? And similarly, a lot of voters, what their primary concern is beating Republicans. You know, Democratic leaning voters want to beat Republicans. And so they'll vote for whoever they're told, whoever they believe is the most electable candidate, which is why, you know, when centrists sometimes make this argument, well, Bernie didn't win, or, you know, people just didn't like him. When the media's role in arguing aggressively that he couldn't win, and you have, you know, CNN hosts saying that there's going to be beheadings in Central Park because of the coming socialist raids. Like, well, of course, what else could the voting public possibly believe?
That was, I don't remember the name of the guy who said that, but there was one guy who said that. I think he had to apologize for that comment, though, because it was pretty wild. But it's not like this was like the every single person was saying this.
They were never once told about how every single poll showed that Bernie was the most electable candidate.
So I guess my concern with this is just that, like, to put
Chris
so
Matthews?
Much blame on the media, I mean, like, sure, like, you can always blame the media. Like, I blame the media for a lot of things. I blame the media for a lot of Donald Trump's success because they kind of have inadvertently, you know, but it's like the media is what it is. And, like, I think that this needs to be, I feel like there's a kind of, like, defeatism contained in this kind of idea of it all being rigged, where it's like, a progressive candidate to win in the Democratic Party, I think it's possible, right? But I feel that it is an this kind of...
Why don't these retards just make their own party? I don't understand.
Because they know they don't have much success in that, so they'd rather corrupt this party.
Yeah, they've literally lost every single fucking... I think they're like 0 for 100 of like the fucking DS... DSA candidates.
Yeah.
To suggest that it's all hopelessly rigged?
Well, I don't think it's defeatist. I don't think it's hopelessly. Well, what is the it? What is the it exactly? And
the primary, let's say.
Okay. So if you were to ask me, I would say that my attitude is the opposite of defeatist. But I think I'm being pragmatic. I worked for Bernie, obviously, in 2020. Yeah. I believed enough in the possibility of winning as a progressive within the Democratic Party to, you know, take a pretty significant pay cut and go be a national press secretary and give my life to this. But then I learned the lesson from that, which is that
checking. She's a Harvard law grad, right? Breonna Joy Gray? Yes. Okay. Just checking. All right.
My fundamental belief is that if you are genuinely progressive, meaning that you take a aggressive stance against the interest groups that are at the root of making life bad for working class Americans, meaning the banking industry, the energy sector, calling out corporate PACs, foreign influence PACs like AIPAC and all of the rest, the health insurance lobby, obviously, because you advance populist policies that are counter to those interests, right? Like universal health care, ending wars, the Green New Deal, et cetera. That because those interests are so embedded in the Democratic Party as a corporate party, they will stop at nothing to stop you. I think that is very difficult to argue with. Is it possible that one might be successful despite those efforts? I think it's possible. But I think that it's frankly so unlikely that we have to, as a left, heighten the contradictions, make that really clear to the voting public, and encourage the public to focus their energy on other strategies to affect change.
Okay, I think this is where the real disagreement begins.
Sure. Let's get into it.
Right. Like, I think that I guess what I sort of don't understand about your position is I don't understand what is like the theory of change here, and on like what time frame do you imagine this happening? Because I guess the way I see it is that the consequences of Donald Trump winning have been so dire that it's like very difficult for me to take seriously the suggestion that like, well, is a correct, you know, it's the idea that we should have diverted all energy away from Kamala Harris to focus on some kind of more revolutionary long-term change. It's like, well, isn't there some way that we can, like, I don't know, both elect a plausible center-left candidate and also have a longer-term, more progressive strategy, considering like stuff like, you know, allowing Elon Musk to come in and destroy USAID, and which is probably killing hundreds of thousands of people, and like
millions.
The Supreme Court that's overturned Roe v. Wade and is gutting voting rights, and all these like fairly difficult to reverse, like catastrophic consequences. Like, that is like a fairly massive short and medium term sacrifice for a potential maybe long term benefit.
Well,
and
I
guess I would maybe need to hear you explain what you think is the theory of long term change here that comes from voting third party, for example.
Well, I would say two things. One, that I and third party voters did not cause Trump to win the first time or the second time, right? There were more Trump voters, as you know. Okay. Two, I would say I'm not, while I might believe, frankly, somewhat pessimistically, that but for things getting worse and having a sort of an accelerationist bent, people are not going to wake up and make things better. I am not, in fact, an accelerationist because I wouldn't actively try to make things worse. And it wasn't me arguing that Donald.
What a tricky phrasing there. I'm not an accelerationist because I wouldn't actively try to make things worse. So what, by not voting for certain candidates, you would passively try to make things worse? Is that what she was implying there? That's what it sounded like to me.
Trump should win over Kamala Harris. My argument was that Kamala Harris is absolutely going to lose if she declines to move on Gaza. And we were right about that, right?
Do you think that Gaza is the issue that caused her the election?
I think it's been pretty proven out by the data. So what we
it absolutely hasn't. I think you can make the argument, but it has to be, in my opinion, in an extended way of like, so much of the left media messaging apparatus was hijacked by this particular issue, and it inhibited our ability to bring up other issues that were more salient and better for our party to the forefront because we're so busy fighting on this. But I don't think it was like a direct one-to-one like she's about to argue.
Has a number of studies, including a study by IMEU, that polls Biden 2020 voters as to why they didn't vote for Kamala Harris in 2024, right? Like, what makes up that deficit that made him win and her lose? And the number one issue is Gaza. The number one issue. Now,
I
so
don't
it's not
know
the,
how true this
it's
is,
not the majority,
but
it's not about
somebody
50%.
Said that the DSA guys, or sorry, the PSA guys, Positive America, did a podcast where they talked to someone who apparently read the whole fucking autopsy or whatever, and Gaza's not even mentioned. I haven't confirmed this myself.
I don't know how true that is.
People, right? But of all of the issues listed at like, you know, 27% or whatever it was, 29%, it was like close to 30%, was Gaza. So there were a lot of different things, right? The short primary, Biden's senility, the sense that they were, you know, dishonest and hiding that from us as a public, the lack of a primary, all of these things. But when you saw how many voters, particularly in swing states like Michigan, were openly saying, we will vote for you. The uncommitted movement, remember, wasn't a we're not going to vote for you movement. It was a we're holding our votes hostage in exchange for this policy concession.
What was that policy concession, by the way?
Which, frankly, would make you more electable to the broader public because nobody supported at that stage. Very few people. The polls were already overwhelmingly in favor of ending support for Netanyahu's government. And the
So the popular policy position in the United States of America was completely sever all ties with the country of Israel, and everybody would have loved that, and it would have been universally good, and there would have been no blowback. Okay, all right, Chief.
The choice was made by the Democratic Party, not people like me, to choose an alliance with Benjamin Netanyahu and Israel and its genocide over winning an election. And Donald Trump, who also obviously is a genocidal candidate, at least had the sort of savvy, political savvy, to try to blur the lines and lie to the public about being a quote-unquote anti-war public. And if you ask a lot of voters, they'll say, I know that Trump was lying to me. I know he wasn't anti-war, but at least it wasn't as in my face as someone like Kamala Harris saying we're going to have the most lethal army and we're not going to break from Benjamin Netanyahu and I'm not going to break from Biden.
Retarded. They always bring up this stupid fucking quote. You always want the most lethal army. What a stupid quote that they bring this up over and over again to prove that she was going to be this crazy neocon war hawk. It's such a stupid. Oh, God. I hate all the punditry today. It's so cringe, bro.
Kamala Harris saying we're going to have the most lethal army and we're not going to break from Benjamin Netanyahu and I'm not going to break from Biden and his policy.
So I guess I think that I sort of don't really see it as a very strong message that has been sent to the Democrats that they lost this election, considering that Donald Trump won, a candidate who is more...
Who is, yeah, it's just, this is, it doesn't make sense, like 20 different ways you view it. This is a stupid point.
Unconditionally fanatical in his allegiance to Israel, right? And who is even more, like, who has, like, gone further than the Democrats, who has, like, banned all funding for, you know, UN aid and relief to Palestinian refugees, and who was, like, threatening to deport people.
Well,
for
Biden
protesting.
Did that.
It's just like, I hate her. I can't, I don't know much more. Maybe like, I don't know how much more I can take this. I hate this. She's a demonic fucking witch. And the fact that anybody takes her seriously in anything is just insane to me. Holy shit.
Biden cut UNRWA funding. That happened under Biden in like spring of 2024, right? Israel claimed. Yeah.
UNRWA funding. First of all, I'm not even sure if Biden can cut UNRWA funding himself, but the funding that was cut had to do with the fact that the crazy Hamas bases and shit were literally being found underneath what were supposed to be UNRWA sites. And there was no possible way that these places existed without the people working at UNRWA and doing the distribution of food and aid and everything else. There's no way that they couldn't have known this shit. That was the reason why. I think it was Netanyahu that pushed to stop funding of UNRWA to this area. I don't know if Biden would have had the ability to do that at all, but it's...
Israel claimed that there were four Hamas terrorists in UNRWA, and as a consequence,
that's such a fucking lie. Oh my god,
UNRWA funding was cut, and that's when the humanitarian crisis really amplified, as opposed to, you know, the starvation, the what do you call it, collective punishment, really amplified, right? So I take your point.
That's a factual question. I'll have to look.
I'm pretty confident about that, because I was.
She's confident on it because she's never been challenged on it, because she only sits in her little media bubbles and says the same fucking crazy lies over and over and over and over and over again.
I'm going to report on this on a daily basis on Rising before, to be clear, I was...
Oh, Rising, the other dog shit sloppulous fucking platform with dog shit sloppulous crystal balls and fucking Sagar the retard. Yeah, somebody said in chat, 9 people were fired by UNRWA regarding their involvement in October 7th attacks. It's just a crazy statement.
Fired because of that exact kind of reporting, right? Reporting on the facts of what was happening and America's lockstep and enabling of Israel's genocide. But the bigger point I would say is this. I can readily concede that there are many ways in which Trump is worse than Biden, obviously, and that Republicans generally are worse than Democrats. I think the question, people in my who share my politics have the feeling that one party being worse than the other is an insufficient reason to vote for the lesser of two evils, when there is enormous latitude for the better party to simply stop being evil. And that the big trick of liberalism is convincing folks that you have to be at least a little bit evil in order to win, even when the opposite is true, even when supporting Medicare for all makes you more electable, even when supporting Palestinian rights makes you more electable. Mm-hmm. Democrats are making choices not, in fact, based on electability.
Just because they're
but
evil.
Based on what their corporate donor base wants them to
there
do.
There you go.
And if
we donors.
Ever want both parties to stop slipping more and more in that direction, and for there to be any red lines in the sand, even over something as cataclysmic as a genocide, somebody has to say, you have to earn my vote at some point in this. So I would turn your question to me back around to you. On what timeline? At what point? Is there ever going to be a litmus test among liberal democratic voters that says this is a kind of evil that I will not succumb to, that I will not support with my vote?
I mean, I see the place to litigate that isn't a primary. And I understand the frustration with not having primary in 2024.
Right.
But that is the way this ought to work, and the way I expect it to work in 2028. But I think
do
that...
You? Are you going to have a fair primary in 2028?
They're already fucking setting it up to where it's going to be rigged because they know that their dog shit fuck candidates are underperforming in almost every single area that they try them out. She's already setting herself up. Oh my God, bro. It's actually like MAGA, like just MAGA left. Jesus.
I think so. I mean, so I guess I don't, I'm not as, again, I think I'm not as impressed as you are by the claim of rigging, which I feel like is a somewhat exaggerated claim for a institutionally backed candidate having an advantage. I mean, I think that I also feel like there's some tension between, so you're saying that you don't think that third party voters or abstaining progressives are the reason why Kamala Harris lost. So in what sense is then Gaza the issue? Because again, it's like if you look at the map, you know, it looks, and if you look at, you know, how many votes Jill Stein got, less than 1%, versus the like significant electoral college and popular vote victory of Donald Trump, it looks to, you know, like it looks like voters shifted to the right, in other words. And so,
why do you
like,
say that?
Well, because
on what?
Because Kamala Harris didn't lose to...
No, you're wrong. They were actually secretly so much further left than we ever realized. they were so close to being the furthest left ever. Okay, just ignore the fact that people voted and were driven by like anti-immigration sentiment and things related to inflation and all that. Like, no, they actually just wanted to be even further left. They wanted even more government stuff. They definitely weren't voting for what they perceived to be as austerity and tax cuts and everything else. Yeah,
a huge amount of voters turned third party. She lost to people turning to Donald Trump.
And then people staying home. So take the Muslim vote, for example.
Okay.
I think about 50% of Muslim Americans voted Republican and the other half voted Green.
Yes.
Because of Gaza,
yes.
Right? So, you can sit here and have a debate about the wisdom of voting for Donald Trump when he was going to be worse. But when I say it's not on the voters, it's because
Muslims are like 1% of the U.S. population. This is just retarded.
There is enormous latitude for Kamala Harris to simply say, you know what, there's a genocide, you're right. Benjamin Netanyahu is unpopular. His government is unpopular even within Israel. I stand with, I will not support sending weapons and arms to Israel. Ceasefire now. And she could have won, right?
So why not? For that to be true, doesn't it have to be the case that she lost the election because of protest voters or abstainers, as opposed to...
Yeah, what I'm trying to argue is that, one, Jill Stein voters, as you point out, are not the ones. But
yeah.
People who chose to stay home or vote for Trump, absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, definitionally you lose because some quantity of voters that voted for your team before either stayed home or went to the other side. And my argument is that those voters could easily have been kept in the pen. Now, to be clear, my personal politics are, I don't think they should go back to the Democratic Party. I don't think anybody should go back to the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
But if I'm a Democratic strategist, if I'm Kamala Harris, I don't get to argue that I was entitled to those votes that I easily could have gotten by simply changing my position to a more populist one. It's almost akin to saying, if I'm Kamala Harris and I come out on stage and decide to say, I hate everybody who lives west of the Mississippi. If you live west of the Mississippi, I do not want you to vote for me. If you live west of the Mississippi, we're going to bomb you and kill you. And then election day comes and she's like, gosh, man, it's really unfair that I lost the election because I antagonized everybody west of the Mississippi. Like, it was the electable position for her to take, and she declined to take it. So at what point do we hold politicians accountable for choosing to throw an election rather than to modify America's relationship with a genocidal country?
So I think there's two questions here, right? Like, one is, whose fault is it that she lost? Kind of a descriptive question. And then the other is, should we have advocated that she lose? A more of a normative question. So like the descriptive question, I think the blame for why an election turns out the way it does is always going to be widely distributed, right? And like, of course, some fault is on Biden and on Kamala Harris. Like, I do think that, like, yeah, I would agree with the criticism that the Biden administration failed they did not have the agility to respond to the situation in Gaza by breaking from decades of bipartisan consensus that Israel's our closest ally and blah, 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 right? Like, they did not have the agility to read the situation and change.
I agree with that. What do you mean they didn't have the agility?
I mean that they acted in a way that was consistent with how American foreign policy has been for decades, as opposed to recognizing that this situation demanded a kind of break from that.
Well, yes and no, right? Because there are these, I broadly know what you're saying. I'm not trying to be so nitpicky, but there are these moments where American presidents, Reagan famously, have picked up the phone and said, Israel, you have to stop bombing Lebanon. This is a bridge too far. And they stop, right? They understand
that their ability to exist
is contingent on U.S. aid, right? Okay.
I agree that like, it is a failure of the Biden administration. They should have been far more aggressive in conditioning aid. I agree.
Or conditioning at all. To be clear, they didn't condition. They violated American law in not conditioning aid at all to Israel.
But there, I mean, well, okay, I won't get into saying why I think Trump is the worst, which I do think he is. But I think that the second question is still like, should people have, because you're not just saying that it's the Kamala Harris's fault that she lost. You're also saying that you think that she should have lost. You want her to have lost, and you advocate.
That's a separate argument. I was trying to be transparent about my own politics, which I recognize are more radical than most. So I don't really want to. I mean, we can, but it's a bit of a side quest. It's like me litigating that like I'm anti-circumcision. Nobody really cares. Like, it's not really the point of this.
Well, I don't think it's a side quest at all. Like, I think like advocating to abstain or to vote third party, that to me is the issue.
Well, no, because there's a difference between me who has more of a radical or like has a much more pessimistic belief about the Democratic Party and its ability to be saved, and who frankly thinks we should just get to it and focus the bulk of our efforts towards starting something, growing the Green Party or PSL or whatever third party we as a community want to invest in. And what I think is the more accessible argument that I think liberals need to engage with, which is, do you want the Democratic Party to represent your interests? Do you want it to be a populist in the meaning of a kind of a majoritarian populist party that is therefore more electable because it is advancing popular policy items, right? That
populist just means more popular.
Include not supporting endless wars, including not supporting genocide, include supporting Medicare for all, etc. And if you as a regular, mostly normie Democrat who supports those things, like 88% of Democrats who support Medicare for all, I think it's absolutely your obligation to say that I'm not going to give you my vote. It makes no sense when 88% of Democrats and almost half of Republicans support Medicare for all for you to be putting up even a single candidate in a presidential cycle who does not support Medicare for all. But that's exactly what we get every time. And it's an independent like Bernie who
everybody
come along and be the one guy in the
Medicare
room
for all.
Who's willing to advocate for the obviously popular and electable.
It's the most popular thing ever.
And if we're having an electability conversation fundamentally and a how to beat Trump conversation fundamentally, or J.D. Vance or Tucker Carlson, whoever it is that comes down the transom, then why wouldn't you enthusiastically be saying, oh my gosh, yes, we have to push these people into the electable position?
I still feel that it's like a bit evasive that you're trying to, well, so you're arguing that we ought to, the blame for Kamala Harris losing ought to be on Kamala Harris and Joe Biden. But you're also—
And the Democratic Party, probably.
And the Democratic Party. But you also do not support that people vote for them. So it's like, it seems
like
you're saying it's their fault that
let me
they,
be clear.
They
let me
lose,
be clear.
But you also want them to lose.
I see the disconnect. I see the disconnect.
Yeah. Let's clear it out.
My belief that we should abandon the Democratic Party altogether becomes from my observation that pushing them doesn't work.
Oh.
Okay. So I look, if people tried to push them and it worked, then my priors would be invalidated and I'd have to be open to the idea of working within the party again, right? And I might have an evolution back to the center, hypothetically. But the reason I personally, through my proximity to the Bernie campaign and following politics over the last 5 years and witnessing what Biden did with his trifecta for the first 2 years, his disinterest in shoring up the Supreme Court, packing the Supreme Court, doing any—
His disinterest in shoring up the Supreme Court. I'm sorry, what does that mean?
Kind of real Supreme Court reform, even as the leaked memo that Roe was about to get overturned came out. All of that, the Build Back Better, bifurcation, the abandonment of the $15 minimum wage, all of those things have led me to the conclusion that I happen to hold. But I also acknowledge that other people aren't there yet. And to get to where I am, they have to witness what I've seen. So I would love to see them try to push the party. I suspect that they will fail and that they will come around to my side. But I do think the obligation is, of course, to push the party. Yeah.
This is sort of what I'm not following, is that you seem to be suggesting that liberals need to be pushing the Democrats left, although you think that is a futile project.
Yeah, I think that it will.
If it's futile, then why should we do it?
Because it is a way to heighten the contradictions.
Because when they try it, and she, because in her eternal wisdom, she knows that if they try to push them left, and then they fail to push them left, that will make them all radical socialists. Yes.
And cause people to have a consciousness about the Democratic Party and who they really are. And it's a consciousness that has started to happen under Bernie Sanders. And it really blossomed because of Gaza. Because so many people who weren't that political or maybe even were right-leaning and were anti-war in a right-leaning way saw what was very obvious, which was that supporting Gaza, supporting Israel was a losing proposition. And that no amount of warning signs would convince the Democratic Party that they should drop this issue or even pretend to drop the issue with a short term in order to win an election, and that the party fundamentally cared more about Israel than it did about beating Donald Trump. And how can you ask voters to care more about beating Donald Trump than a party who only really uses Trump
Israel
as a cudgel to advance its corporate and imperialist interests?
I guess it seems to me, though, that, like, again, what the theory of change that you're suggesting is that presumably a fairly long-term project of bringing about the disintegration of the Democratic Party and the emergence of some kind of new left populist party. I mean, that's what you're suggesting, yeah?
100%. I mean, and just the same way as the Republican Party emerged because neither major American party was willing to acknowledge abolitionism as a movement. Right. Right. Yeah. No one was willing to recognize the abolitionist movement. And so the Republicans emerged because there was half the country that was completely unseen within the political context.
But if that doesn't happen on a reasonable time frame, like if the Democratic Party does not disintegrate, then it seems that what you're advocating is, you know, for us to essentially wind up with like a 50-year MAGA Reich, which—
Well, no, to be clear, the Democrats at any point could choose to win, right? The Democrats at any point could choose to win. All they have to do is say, we're not going to support a genocide. Is that too much to ask?
Do exactly what I want.
I guess I'm not convinced that the Democrats will easily win if they simply say we're not going to support a genocide.
Why not?
Because
I'm looking at the poll now. It
Donald
was 29%.
Donald Trump won perfectly well without making any such concession.
Au contraire, he said he supported a ceasefire. This is my point about—
So did Kamala. Oh my God. Oh, when Donald Trump says he supports a ceasefire, you think that means he's opposed to the genocide? He just wanted to bring— I can't, sorry. She's such a fucking idiot.
How the right is willing to lie about it. And the Democrats won't even pretend to lie about it.
Kamala said she supported a ceasefire, by the way. But
wasn't Kamala Harris also
yes
at least nominally in favor of a ceasefire yes. and a two-state solution?
No, she had to try. Well, the two-state solution is a whole other conversation.
Be careful. A lot of people don't realize this because you don't know how crazy the conversation is. Two-state solution is Islamophobic and anti-Palestinian. You're not supposed to be two-stater anymore. Now it has to be a one state where Arabs are the majority. It has to be the destruction of the Jewish majority Israeli state. So don't ever bring up two-state and think you're trying to win some credit with these people. You're not.
I'm really in favor of a ceasefire and a two-state solution.
No, she had to try. Well, the two-state solution is a whole other conversation. That is not really the demand at present. But she had AOC tried out AOC at the DNC after precluding any Palestinians, you know, pro-Democrat Palestinians from speaking at the DNC to argue that Kamala Harris was tirelessly fighting for a ceasefire, when subsequent biographies like Kamala Harris's 107 Days biography and this Alex Thompson, Jake Tapper book acknowledged that at no point, reporting is clear, at no point did Joe Biden consider a ceasefire. At no point. And that was a bald-faced lie, right? Which is part of why...
I don't know.
There's so much frustration with the sort of AOC left, because here's where my argument continues, that when you do get progressives elected, and I was extremely enthusiastic about AOC. I was there the night reporting on her victory primary that nobody expected her to win. I was there her first day at office when she did the Green New Deal sit-in, and I very hopeful about what was going to happen with her and the other electeds that were progressives that were elected in the years after. But in truth, the party changes you rather than the other way around. And this dovetails, sorry, I want to like give you a chance to respond, but this dovetails with another, I think, criticism that you make of the left, which is that we don't, what is it, you know, famously, your famous quote of the thing,
this guy?
The left doesn't want power, the left wants to endlessly critique power. And this comes up in critiques of people like AOC and Zohra Mamdani once they get into office. But we can come to that. I want to give you a chance to respond. I've said a lot.
Well, I still don't understand why you think that, okay. Like, why does Donald Trump not have to do any of these things to get elected that you think that progressives would have to do?
Do what things?
Well, to... you know, call for the end of Israel as a Jewish state or whatever to.
By the way, I do think that should happen. That's me and my personal politics. Yeah. And I think there's a good reason for that, because the maintenance of a Jewish majority in the Arab world requires apartheid. It requires denial.
What did she? In an Arab world? Hold on.
A lot.
Well, I still don't understand why you think that. Like, why does Donald Trump not have to do any of these things to get elected that you think that progressives would have to do?
Do what things?
Well, to, you know, call for the end of Israel as a Jewish state or whatever to...
By the way, I do think that should happen. That's me and my personal politics. Yeah. And I think there's a good reason for that, because the maintenance of a Jewish majority in the Arab world requires apartheid. It requires denying Palestinians the right to return. To create a demographic majority, you have to do exactly what Israel's been doing, which is genocide, ethnic cleansing, and apartheid. So that's my view. But to be clear, that is not what I think Kamala Harris had to do to win.
Okay.
But so I guess I don't understand why, like, voters seem to have no trouble electing Donald Trump, this man who has an extremely pro-Israel position, more pro-Israel than the Democratic Party does. Like, why is he able to get elected without pivoting against Israel, whereas why is this a condition for the Democrats to succeed? I feel like what you're saying would make more sense if Jill Stein had gotten like 30% of the vote or something. I'd be like, well, okay, that's you have a point there, but like, that's not what happened, right? It's voters are supporting a further right, more pro-Israel candidate. So it's a little
and
bit
protest,
hard to reconcile with the idea that this is the reason why Democrats can't get elected.
I think for one, it's to punish Joe Biden, under whom this genocide started and under whom to date most of the deaths have occurred and most of the infrastructural destruction in Gaza has occurred, right?
I mean, because he was president for longer during that. This is like when people say, like, don't you know more people died of COVID under Biden than Trump? And it's like, well, yeah, but that's because I think Biden came in afterwards and COVID was still happening. Like, this is just a time frame question. So, I mean, like, I don't know if you're really making a point here.
So it cannot go ignored that while you could anticipate that Donald Trump was going to do more of the same and should have anticipated that Donald Trump was going to do more of the same, that doesn't justify in the eyes of many voters, including voters whose lives and families have been directly implicated by this genocide, voting for the guy who did it. So if I'm standing there, you know, stabbing you, I don't mean to like conjure violence, but, you know, if I'm standing there with a can of gas having burned your house down, and I'm like, vote for me, the other guy. The other guy is going to burn your house down twice. I mean, you can imagine that you as an individual aren't going to want to vote for me. I just burned your house down.
So I can understand the psychology of that when you're the person whose house is being burned down. But I also sort of don't really see. So I don't understand how like Biden's stance on Israel is being effectively punished by electing someone who's even more pro-Israel.
Well, people are saying you can't win. You're not going to be allowed to win under these conditions. If you want to win an election, Democratic Party, you have to move not even to the left, to the center, to the majority of the country.
I don't think Brianna doesn't have like a great answer to this, so she can't meaningfully engage. So she's going to keep repeating herself, I guess.
She is, and the majority of the world is on Israel. Because you understand, Natalie, that like in elections, there's a bunch of people who are always going to be Republicans. There are a bunch of people who are always going to be Democrats. And they're fighting for this center swing group of swing voters.
Yes.
And anti-war sentiments, along with a lot of other sentiments, many of which, frankly, I don't align with, are preponderant among that group. Right. And that was a real driving force in the electorate. Among the people that you needed to get to change, Gaza anti-war. I mean, Trump has been cultivating a sort of anti-war, anti-interventionist personality for a really long time. Right. One of the things he bragged about was being a president that started no new wars. You can sit here and you can argue with that,
right.
But like that was something that was a pitch
false,
that he.
But he did say
right.
that, yes.
But that's a pitch that he made. So this, but this mm-hmm. is my point. You say that Trump didn't have to do the things that I'm saying that Biden or Kamala Harris should have done, but he did, and it was a lie. But he did do those things. He presented. He listened to the base and he gave them the message that they want to hear. While
isn't, I mean, isn't
Kamala
also
was,
that the Democrats lied.
In what ways?
Well, in terms of like, I mean, you suggested that the Democrats lied about wanting a ceasefire.
Yes.
Lied about conditioning aid.
Yeah, I do. I think they lied less effectively, and I think they lied more minimally. I think when you have one guy lying and
so
saying, I'm going to end the war.
They should lie better.
Well, no, I think that they should tell the truth and cut ties with Israel. But if we're asking who's responsible, who had the power, who the onus was on to actually stop Trump, that clearly was not me or any podcaster or any voter or anybody tweeting on Al Gore's internet, Elon Musk's internet. It was the party who had. And one last point I would make about this is, I'm sure you've been following this, what's going on with this DNC autopsy report. Have you?
Yes,
I'm sure. People have lives.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've heard that the prevailing theory, which may not be true, but the prevailing theory is that the reason they don't want to release the autopsy report is that it shows exactly what the IMEU study and other studies have shown, which is that the number one issue for Biden 2020 voters that didn't want to vote for Kamala 2024 and didn't vote for Kamala in 2024 was ending Israel's violence in Gaza at 29%, followed by the economy, 24%, Medicare and Social Security at 12%, immigration at 11%, healthcare at 10%, and on down the line. So if they release that, the idea is, I'm sorry, just to put a fine point on it. The idea is that if the Democratic Party acknowledges and releases that they knew that was the case, then suddenly the onus is very clear, right? Who has the responsibility for
watching the VOD, so I'm a bit slow. BJG was completely wrong when she said half of Muslims voted for Trump. That sounded like an insane number, but okay, half voted for Kamala. 31% voted for Trump. 12% voted for Jill Stein. That's a pretty disappointing number. Okay, but more Muslims voted for Harris than Trump. I don't know. Her, like, these people will torture data or just lie about it, or it's just cringe. What are you going to do?
Losing to Trump is very clear. And the contrast that I think is my mission as a podcaster and a political commentator to demonstrate who the Democratic Party really is and what their priorities are.
Basic attacks creating water might heal plants. Oh, maybe.
Really are. Becomes very obvious to everyone. And I think you do start to get a lot of defection.
Every sentence she says goes against the one before it. No, it's pretty... It all makes sense if you just try really hard to think about it. Like, I would only ever date a girl who's shorter than me. Oh, well, why are you dating a girl who's taller than you? Because her being taller than me reminds me of how much I appreciated short girls, but, like, I think that this change is actually better even going into the future. So even though I did and do have a preference for shorter girls, this one makes me appreciate a taller girl. Oh, okay, well, but she's not even a girl, actually. We just found out she's a guy, and you knew she was a guy. Well, yeah, but when I say a preference for girls, I just mean somebody who acts like one. And it's just like every single time, like, a new thing comes up, there's just, like, another, like, I call these, like, asterisks, like, qualifier statements to make it make sense. Like, when the Trumple people say, the 2020 election was rigged, but the 2024 election was fair. Well, 2020 election had more people voting than the 2024 one. What do you mean? How was that one rigged? Well, the 2024 election was proof that the 2020 election was rigged because the 2024 election had less voters because it was rigged with more voters than the first one. And it's like, but Biden was president during the second election and Trump was president during the first election. So how did they rig the vote when Trump was president but not when Biden was president? Well, in the first one, they were able to rig it because of the deep state. But then in the second one, they couldn't rig it because it was too big to rig, even though it was smaller than the one before. But it was too big to rig in that there were more real voters than there were in the last one. So it was too big to rig because in the first one, there's always like a compounding reason for why whatever you're saying, even though it contradicts exactly what you just said, there's a reason why. Like, she just brought up the whole like, well, Trump lied to his base, so that's why he was able to effectively sway them on like Israel-Palestine. And she's not even correct about what they lied about, because wanting a ceasefire has nothing to do with wanting peace or anything. Everybody wants credit for ending wars. But then, you know, Contra points out that, well, Harris said she wanted a ceasefire too. And then Brandon Dreger is like, well, she just needed to lie better. Or it's retarded.
The Democratic Party really is, and what their priorities really are, becomes very obvious to everyone. And I think you do start to get a lot of defections from the party, or at least calls for an enormous overhaul of leadership, et cetera.
Well, yes, I want them to release the autopsy. I want them to do whatever it takes to get elected. If that means cutting off all aid to Israel, then they should do that. I mean, I think it probably, in reality, is likely wrapped up with a bunch of other issues, like the fact that the voters are upset about inflation, or about like vague concerns about like maybe my child might encounter a transgender book in school, and the Democrats are supposed to do something.
That wasn't on the list, by the way. That isn't on this IMEU list at the very least. Nothing.
Well, I hope it's not.
Nothing cultural. Abortion policy was number 9, and at 9%, and I don't know was 5%, but nothing.
Yeah. Like, maybe my child might encounter a transgender book in school, and the Democrats are supposed to do something.
That wasn't on the list, by the way.
Can somebody link whatever she's quoting or citing to here? I'm curious what this is.
That isn't on this IMEU list at the very least. Nothing.
Well, I hope it's not.
Nothing cultural. Abortion policy was number 9, and I don't. At 9%, and I don't know was 5%. But nothing about transports. Nothing about COVID. A lot of issues that I think folks thought were going to be determinative weren't, at least among these Biden 2020 to Harris 2024 voters.
But can you see how it's like a little bit difficult for me to take your
page 152? Jesus Christ. Okay, Biden non-Harris sample. Online sample of 604 voters. Which one of the following issues was most important in deciding your vote for presidential candidate / decision to not vote for presidential candidate? Okay, so this was Biden non-Harris sample. These were people that voted for Biden in 2020 but didn't vote for Harris in 2024 is what this means. So this is where ending Israel's violence in Gaza was 29% of the total polled people. 24% was the economy, 11% was immigration, 10% was healthcare, 9% was abortion policy, 12% was Medicare and Social Security. Okay, this is what she's citing too. I have no idea how difficult it is to figure out, like, polling people who voted in one election and not the other. I don't know how complicated it gets to follow those people, but all right, at least I know what she's citing here.
Criticisms of what you think the Democrats ought to do to get elected when you're simultaneously saying that people should not elect them. Like, your position is that people should divest from the Democratic Party. So yeah, like, because it's not in your interest for the Democrats to get elected based on your positions, right? You don't want them
to
win.
What do you mean?
You don't want the Democrats to win, right?
I think in an ideal world, given how hard it's going to be and how hard it already is for so many people, in an ideal world, I mean, I worked for Bernie for this reason. In an ideal world, a social Democrat like Bernie Sanders gets elected. We get universal health care, a basic social Democrat safety net, free education, and, you know, our little, you know, capitalist kingdom gets to tip along for another 100 years and save a lot of people from immiseration. I think that's what I was working for, along with so many other people in 2020. But what I learned was how unlikely that is. What I learned from experience. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I mean, your current position, though, is that people should divest from the Democratic Party. Isn't this sort of an energetic drain at minimum on the enthusiasm that it takes to be able to win elections?
How so?
Well, it seems that you're using your platform to encourage people to abstain or to vote third party or to sort of, in general, just give up on the Democrats. Doesn't that, like, my experience is that in 2024, it was very difficult to advocate for Kamala Harris in public with a leftist audience because of the extreme genocide allegations. Yes, that you would then be accused of.
Did she just say genocide allegations? That's why Brianna's fine. Allegations, bitch.
Like, I feel like I guess I don't see voting as like a symbolic expression of my like virtuous stance on any particular issue so much as I do like a consequentialist calculation about like what is
Me
the
too.
Actual effect of this. And
Me
the
too.
Actual effect of electing Donald Trump has been disastrous.
Yes, and the actual effect of voting blue no matter who means that we get more right-wing presidents every time, both on the Democratic side and on the Republican side. And the only way to curb that ratchet effect would be to say, hey, Democrats, you absolutely can get my vote. My vote is absolutely gettable. And it's not because I'm asking for some crazy demand that's going to cause you to lose 3 other votes somewhere else. It's only upside. I have a plan for you, Democrats. Here's how you win. You oppose the genocide, you call it a genocide, and you say you're going to stop funding the genocide and follow follow American law, the Leahy Law, which prohibits me from funding these war crimes to begin with, and you can win. How can you argue against that?
Because people have been making this argument my entire life. I mean, people argue about Ralph Nader in year 2000. Like,
what argument
the idea,
is that?
The argument that by voting third party, there's an opportunity to meaningfully shift the Democrats.
No, but that wasn't what I just said, right?
Move left. Well,
what I just said is, hey, I'm a Democrat. This is what I was advocating for Democrats. If you want to be me, great. But if you're a Democrat, my argument is to say, and this is what the Uncommitted Movement was saying, my vote is up on offer. I want to give you my vote. I want to stop Trump. I want to give you my vote. And all you have to do is do this thing, which is going to make you more popular and more electable. And the Democrats said, no, I would rather lose than incur the wrath of my AIPAC donors or whatever else is at the root of our entanglement with Israel as a country, our military base that is the state of Israel.
But in order for this like blackmail message to be effective, like, doesn't it have to be the case that third party voters are the determining factor in swinging the election, which you just said that
they're not third party voters, like people who declined to vote for Kamala Harris are not third party voters.
Do the protest voters have the leverage to be taking the election hostage in this way?
Well, they quite obviously did. And that's why they don't want to release, arguably, the autopsy report, right? They quite obviously did. And if that becomes, okay, sure. But what's not speculation is that we know that 29% of people who didn't vote for Kamala Harris in 2024, but who did vote for Biden in 2020, said that ending Israel's violence in Gaza was the reason, right? So if you're the Democrats and you have this option, part of me wants to open one of these books and rifle through, because I remember at some point in, I can't remember if it's Original Sin or in 107 Days, I think it's Original Sin, there was reporting, and there's been ample reporting at this point, 2 years out, that internally, Biden understood, they understood how much this issue was hurting them. And they chose to ignore it. In fact, they chose to double down on it. Mm. Right? And I don't understand, like, at some point, Natalie, like at some point, I mean, is there anything that Democrats would do that you would say, if Donald Trump, if the 2016 version of Donald Trump were running against the 2024 Donald Trump on the Democratic ticket, would you say that we should vote for 2016 Donald Trump because his first term was better than a second term?
Okay, I mean,
that was the easiest no-brainer of the world. If somebody was like, should we vote for if the two candidates were Donald Trump first term or Donald Trump's second term? I'm literally tripping over myself, and I'm making every single illegal immigrant I know run to the polling places to vote for Donald Trump first term. What an unbelievably fucking retarded question.
Sense would say, if Donald Trump, if the 2016 version of Donald Trump were running against the 2024 Donald Trump on the Democratic ticket, would you say that we should vote for 2016 Donald Trump because his first term was better than a second term?
Okay, I mean, so I joke about like how we would vote for Satan to stop Donald Trump. There probably is a line. I've yet not found it yet of like what like moral depth to which I would stoop to stop Donald Trump.
So what does that
low.
Mean?
Yeah.
So play that out for me. Everyone always asking me to play out my plan. Play out the consequences of vote blue no matter who. Because you and others, I don't mean to put it all on you, but ask me what the timeline is. I got to this place because I started asking more centrist oriented people what the timeline is for Medicare for All. How long are we
on the I started asking, well, when are we going to get the most extreme version of healthcare coverage across the entirety of the world? When the United States already has significantly less guaranteed healthcare coverage than the rest of the world, why can't we have the most expansive healthcare coverage of the entire world?
Supposed to deal with the fact that 68,000 people die every year from a lack of health insurance. What's the timeline on that? And I had people come to me who were Medicare for All activists from the state of California, who were Bernie's Medicare for All czar, and their plans were minimum 20-year time horizons, saying that, well, the argument that was made to me was Gavin Newsom was going to get Medicare for All in the state of California, that he was going to become president, and that he was then going to bring Medicare for All to the entire country. Gavin Newsom doesn't even support Medicare for All anymore, obviously. Mm-hmm. And the state of California, with its overwhelmingly Democratic legislature, has intentionally scuttled their CalCare program now multiple times, including just recently.
What do you mean by intentionally scuttled? Is it CalCare? I thought it was Medi-Cal or whatever. I thought it was supposed to be decent. I don't know enough about it.
So at a certain point, I mean, let me maybe ask it this way, Natalie. How much do you think that donor influence and corporate interests are determining the policies of the Democratic Party?
100%.
Well, they certainly have some effect. I think I maybe don't think they have quite the level of effect that you do, because yes, they have some effect, but they also, like, at the end of the day, do still need to get elected.
No, nope. Right?
So I don't
think
there's
care.
An infinite like capacity for corporate influence.
Wrong.
There's a limit to how far you can push it where people will stop.
Wrong.
Well, this is kind of my point. So we saw that limit with Gaza and they didn't care.
Yep.
Right?
Like, Democrats have tried over the years to, like, I mean, Obama came fairly like with the Affordable Care Act, they came fairly close to getting not Medicare for All, but a single payer option.
Well, Natalie.
Natalie, the ACA sucked dick. Are you serious? Natalie, the AC was fucking trash because we didn't get
us.
No,
where
shut
you
up.
Can, like, oh,
you're wrong. It was horrible. Fucking idiot.
Really close. No, but they, being shot down by Joe Lieberman.
Okay, but like, why is it, Natalie? We know how slim the Republicans' margins are right now, right?
Yeah.
And yet they managed to do everything in the world. Why is it?
I wonder why. Jeez. Well, no, it's because they're not actually doing anything. She's just wrong. Lying, actually. For Brianna, she's a intentional enough malicious actor that I would ascribe evil to every position she has more than ignorance. The reason why the Republicans do everything they want now is because the only thing they're doing is coming out of the White House. Republicans aren't passing legislation. Republicans have failed every single time they've tried to do anything that involves the Congress. Trump can't even get them to get rid of the filibuster in the Senate. Like, so they can do everything they can now because Trump's going through executive order. Like, that's, do you think Barack Obama could have gotten the single payer health care via an executive order?
How slim the Republicans' margins are right now, right?
Yeah.
And yet they managed to do everything in the world. Why is it that Barack Obama had a supermajority?
Maybe he should have tried.
Had a supermajority. When we say it was settled by Joe Lieberman, we're saying that he was the 60th vote in a supermajority.
Yeah.
And why is it that it seems to be the case that Democrats are always one or two votes shy from doing the thing that, you know, 75% of the country wants them to do?
But really?
Republicans always manage to push through the thing that only 20% of the country wants them to do.
Well, do you think that, I mean, do you really think that, like, Nancy Pelosi, for example, didn't want single payer? Like,
yes.
I think that she did.
Yes.
Like,
Yeah, thank you. Does Contra, well, I imagine maybe she has to ask these questions. Sometimes I don't know if people are aware of how evil some of the people they're talking to are, but yeah, she thinks, Brianna Drag-Rate doesn't think the Democrats ever actually wanted it to pass. They believe in this whole, this concept of a pressure release valve that you just do it for a little bit to shut your base up, and then at the end of the day, you're just appeasing the corporate donors.
I think that this genuinely
I don't.
You don't think that she did?
I don't. I don't think that Democratic leadership, Nancy Pelosi, whomever, I don't think that Democratic Party leadership wants single payer. Absolutely not.
I don't think that's supported by Nancy Pelosi's actions in 2010.
How so?
I mean, I would have to, we'd have to fact check this after the fact, but
did
I
Nancy
recall
Pelosi
her making
support
a fairly strong effort to achieve this and eventually needing to create a compromise option in order to get Joe Lieberman on board. But I think that, look, I mean, I do think that in the future, like, Donald Trump has proved that by acting in a sort of heavy-handed authoritarian fashion, it is possible to do a bunch of stuff that's not popular. Should the Democrats, well, I mean, I do consider it a serious defect of the Obama administration that he was so, like, there was this mindset of, like, oh, we need to be bipartisan and we need to constantly reach across the aisle. And, like, yeah, I hate all of that. Obviously, I think a major lesson of the Obama administration was, we do not go high. Don't do that. Like, and I think that, I think Biden improved on that somewhat. There's room for still more improvement. Well, I think Biden, like, did a number of things that were not, you know, would not have been doable if you needed Republican cooperation. But I think that,
like, I mean, I'm not trying to be contrarian. I just want to know specifically what you're thinking about.
Well, I'm thinking about, like Medicaid expansion and infrastructure bill. And, you know, like he was more aggressive in getting some of these things done than I think Obama was.
But so, like, he was in the infrastructure bill example where he had the leverage comes, right, from having the infrastructure project that Republicans want. And because it was COVID and the country was shut down and everyone needed the country to get going for capitalism reasons, right? So we took all of that stuff that even Republicans wanted to vote for, bundled it with a bunch of stuff that were Democratic priorities because they were social spending priorities. Mm-hmm. And then broke those two things apart so that Republicans could get what they wanted without having to do all the Democratic. Like, that was the Build Back Better bifurcation dance that even AOC called out, right? Like, even AOC, there was that whole rigmarole around how they were going to hold the line and that they weren't going to vote for the one package unless both packages. And then,
so I agree with you that,
so
that there's a lot of room for a Democratic administration to be even more aggressive. And I agree that they should.
So why don't they? Why aren't they? What's the, because people like me are often accused as being not having a material analysis of thinking we're going to win because of vibes. I feel very strongly that I'm doing the opposite. That when you just love Mamdani and love AOC, that's the vibes. I liked what they stood for and what they said. And now that they're in office, it's about asking, analyzing, and as someone who is in the media, pressing them on whether or not they're using the leverage that they have at their disposal to maximize the follow through on their campaign commitments, right? It's not about me loving them. My job is not to love Mamdani as much as he seems like a fun hang. I have nothing personal against any of these people, but I have to raise questions, right? Why does Zora Mamdani endorse Kathy Hochul prematurely when she hasn't released fundraising, the funding to him that he needs to advance his agenda? Why does he come out and
why isn't he making enemies of every single person that might determine the success or failure of his political project?
Wade, a challenger to Hakeem Jeffries, when Hakeem Jeffries is one of the most vocal Zionists in the entire country. The leader of the Democratic Party bungled Democratic Party redistricting in New York in a way that cost us seats in the, cost Democrats seats in the House, and also did not support Zohran Mamdani's campaign even after he won the primary. You know, why did he say that he would vote for Hakeem Jeffries to be Speaker of the House prematurely, ostensibly without getting any concessions? If he has gotten concessions, why won't he be more forthcoming about what he was able to get with his leverage so people like me would leave him alone? Right? These are questions I think it's incumbent on us to ask, because we want him to be successful on his campaign promises, not just successful in a person who has a job as mayor who wants job stability. Right? I'm not invested in his job stability.
Once a politician gets elected, they have to like engage with the reality of their situation. They need to cooperate with other people to achieve things.
True.
Right? Cooperate with
like,
who?
That's such a stupid. I wonder if Shaver has, if Contra has the same thoughts I was going to say. Why the fuck? What am I even having to explain right now? That you as an elected mayor don't have the luxury of attacking every single fucking person in the country that you think isn't as ideological peer as you because you're trying to fucking run your constituency. You're trying to run your, you know, whatever you're elected to govern. Like, it's such an obviously stupid fucking point.
Elected, like an elected politician cannot base all of their behavior around like,
oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Winning the recognition from people who are protest voters and
wait a minute. Did you, what did I, can you steel man back to me what I wanted Zohran Mamdani to do with Kathy Hochul and why?
I can't. No.
Okay. So can I want to be really clear about this. I'll repeat it. I'm not just wanting him to run around saying I'm the biggest Marxist ever, beating his chest and saying free Palestine. That's not my argument. My argument is that he fought for free buses, you know, free childcare, a number of policy priorities that were going to require funding from Albany, right? From the governor of the state. So when I raise concerns about him endorsing Kathy Hochul in her reelection bid during an election season, when there was her own lieutenant governor was challenging her, a lieutenant governor who came out and endorsed Zohran Mamdani early and who supported Zohran Mamdani's funding, when Kathy Hochul was saying she did not agree with his funding priorities, I see that as Zohran Mamdani prematurely giving up leverage for something that he says he wants, which is free buses. I'm with Zohran Mamdani. Let's get those free buses. But how are you going to get them when the governor of your state is saying that she doesn't believe in your policy agenda and frankly also wouldn't even endorse you after you after you won your primary against an actual predator of Andrew Cuomo, right?
Yes.
So I feel like my ask is extremely pragmatic. How are you using your leverage to get money to do the thing that you say you want to do in New York?
I mean, that may, so I don't know the details of this particular situation. That may be a valid criticism for all I know, but it does seem like, I don't see, it's hard for me to see like what you're saying as pragmatic when it seems like even the furthest left politicians that get elected in the United States, you sort of are not supporting because you see them as like immediately becoming compromised by this hope of
not supporting.
System.
What does it mean to support? Is my job to support them or is my job to do my bidding? Because I'm the voter. I'm the constituent.
Well, did you support Zohran Mamdani in the election?
I did. And I had him on the show. I've had him on the show 4 or 5 times before most people even knew what his name was.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
I supported him because he was doing things like doing a hunger strike in support of taxi drivers who are being financially immiserated by the cost of their medallions and killing themselves in New York City. But more importantly, I don't support Zohran Mamdani. I support what he ran on. My job is not to support some random 34-year-old man who seems really nice. My job is to support his agenda. And if he's acting in ways that don't seem to be in furtherance of his agenda, it's my job to ask why at the bare minimum as someone who's ostensibly sort of in the media, in the press.
Well, and it's your right to ask that. But I do feel that like this is like we're talking about this kind of feud between people on the very far left of American politics, right? Where, I mean, and you can sort of do this. You can do this when it comes to especially something like the mayor of New York City, where it's like, yeah, I mean, New York City is on the far left of the American political spectrum. But when it comes to like a national presidential election, like this type of thing is like, so I don't know, don't you, I see this as like so far on the left end of the spectrum as to like sort of not be relevant to winning like median voters. So I mean, I feel like the focus on it is like a little bit
to stay on this for a second though, Natalie. I think what was frustrating to me, like when I listened to you in conversation with Joshua Citarella, part of what's frustrating is there's this caricature of my position, right? There's this caricature of the left's position, which says we just want to beat up on Zohran and AOC, right? Like we just are running on vibes. We're never happy. We don't want power. We want to endlessly critique power.
True.
And my view of it is we fought to the nail to get these people into power. And when they are in power, we would like them to use it. And I choose not to speak about liberals in this way because I don't know how constructive it is. And so many of them are kind of organically coming around to my position because they see the Democratic Party doing and not fighting and not being a resistance party. But I could easily characterize liberals as being exactly what you claim the left is, which is not caring about power. Right? Because Zohran and then they have power, but only caring about kind of abstractly sitting in those seats without actually wielding power. And that to me, it's very frustrating because we should be on the same side. But I think there was this cartoonish caricature and an attempt to drain the substance out of the critique of the left that has us at cross purposes where I don't actually know that you disagree. Like when I outline the specific critique of Zoran, it doesn't sound like you disagree with it. So is there something else that I'm missing here that's your critique of the left?
Well, so I think when you're critiquing specific things that Mamdani does or that Biden did or that like yes, of course it's within reason to criticize your elected officials, and we all ought to do that. I agree, but I also think that what my frustration with the left is more that when it comes time to actually elect, the energy is so oppositional to like it's very difficult to build the kind of momentum behind a candidate when it's so much. I don't see this problem existing on the right where you don't have obviously Trump has lost a lot of his I think so supporters in the last year, but during the election they show up for him and they form this kind of unified and some of this has to do with right wing values around loyalty and submission and stuff, and I don't necessarily advocate adopting that, but I do think that you don't even support Kamala Harris during the election. It's not like you say okay, well, we'll get her elected and then we criticize. It's that when you're not you don't even want to get her elected, then
that's where
I see the criticism as being this critiquing power thing.
Okay,
because
let's talk about power. Let's talk about leverage.
Okay.
Do I have more leverage against Kamala Harris before she's elected or once she's president for 4 years?
Well, in the sense, I see what you're saying, as a protest voter threat, but
it really depends on what exactly you're talking about. That's such a one-dimensional. I hate how she smugly smiles because she knows she's fucking lying to the audience and she's selling it well. I don't know. Is there any pressure on Donald Trump right now, who's not only already elected president, but he's a lame duck president, so he's even a second term? You don't think there's any pressure on the president when midterms are coming up or in preparation for the next election? You don't think there's any pressure on the president to steer the economy or foreign policy or whatever else in a certain direction because he sees that his party is about to get fucking eviscerated? Of course you can still pressure people once they're through their elected terms, especially the president. This is such a nonsense argument.
I don't know. Do the Democrats take that threat seriously? Or because I feel like I feel like a lot of Democrats feel that when the protest voters are sort of unwinnable, are sort of never happy, right? Whereas there are centrist median voters that are more winnable, right? And that's, I think,
and
it tends to be the reaction to losing an election.
Well, I don't know. You tell me. All of your candidates get fucking annihilated in their elections, and it seems like the Democratic Party is still a viable party in the United States, is about to sweep the next set of the midterms. How are you supposed to answer that? What does she think the answer is there? It's working out horribly for the Democratic Party, but it's working out so well for our little socialist clique.
And how is that playing out? Who are these centrist voters? So this is you're completely right. This is the Democrats' belief. They believe that if they take Liz Cheney, the daughter of the architect of the Iraq War, to Dearborn, Michigan, America's largest Muslim population, and parade her around on the stage, that they are going to find some voter, some Midwestern war-loving voter who is so in love with Liz Cheney, a woman who lost her seat because she wouldn't subscribe to Trumpism, and that's somehow going to gin up votes for her.
Well, I understand. I don't even know what some of these attacks are for. She lost her seat because she was willing to participate in the January 6th Select Committee, which was heroic. But, okay.
Right? You're completely right. This is where I would disagree with you. This is where I would just modify that a little bit. I don't think that the Democratic Party necessarily believes that there are more voters to be gotten in this weird, socially liberal, economically conservative middle ground of people that I don't think really, exist in any big numbers. But I do think that they are fundamentally unwilling to go the economic populist route.
Because they're corporate
donors.
Because
their donors won't allow it.
Yeah.
And you keep asking me, which is a really good question, which is why does it seem to be so much easier for Republicans? And I think I would answer that in two ways. One, because Donald Trump is in fact throwing meat to his base. He's saying we're gonna go after immigrants. They're the wrong kind of people. He's saying I'm gonna be an anti-war candidate. It's a lie, but he's saying all that stuff. And that's what his base wants to hear. I cannot fathom what the Kamala Harris or Joe Biden equivalent of that was. What did Kamala Harris run on?
A lot of the messaging was very pro-democracy.
Anti-Trump.
I think, yes, it was anti-Trump, which right. I think probably, well, evidently it did not work. I mean, I think it appeals to someone like me who's concerned, like who's like deeply bothered by Trump and by January 6th.
Well, it appeals to people who are already going to vote Democrat no matter who.
But so it doesn't, and it's not, no, it's
so
not
it doesn't
a
matter.
Stable issue. I agree.
Right, so it's so, fundamentally.
That should probably not be the focus.
It's a waste of, yes, it's a waste of everybody's time because the people who that appeals to are going to vote Democrat no matter what. No matter what. So who do you actually need to get? You need to get me. You need to get the Muslims in Dearborn.
But like,
you need
to get some anti-war.
I mean, me personally, it's like, I don't think that it's useful to talk about me because I live in Washington, D.C. because
I'm
the one.
You.
Right. But I just mean the royal me.
How is Trump a lame duck? Lame duck just means that you can't run for office again.
What she needed to get was the millions of voters.
A lame duck means you don't have either houses of Congress, so you can't do anything.
What? Am I retarded? I thought lame duck is when you're, I thought you're considered a lame duck president when you are in your second term and the idea is you're not going to be competitive for, you're not going to care about trying to win an election again.
Is an incumbent executive in their final term or after losing an election? Got it. Okay. You're right. I'm wrong.
Fuck chat. And fuck you, bitch.
Joe Biden in 2020 that declined to vote for Kamala Harris in 2024 and who said the number one reason they did so was the war in Gaza.
Yeah.
That's what
she really loves that one fucking Middle Eastern studies poll, man. She loves that one. That's like her, she's hanging her whole hat on that.
Like I feel that the 2028 primary will decide this. Like, but I also think that again, just like looking at the history of Democrats losing elections, like usually when the Democrats lose a presidential election, the next candidate is further to the right and not further to the left.
Yes. Right?
And that after 12 years of Reaganism, you got Bill Clinton.
And why is that?
This is all proving her point though. And you're about to hear why.
When Gore lost in 2000, you got John Kerry. When Bernie Sanders lost in 2016, when Hillary Clinton lost in 2016, you got Joe Biden. I mean, why is that? I think it's because the Democrats pivot to attracting centrist voters.
Right. And why do we allow them to do that when it repeatedly causes them to lose?
But it doesn't though, right? Because after that, they won with Obama. And then after Trump, they won with Biden. So I don't know what she means there.
But it doesn't cause them to lose. Like Bill Clinton.
Did Hillary Clinton win?
No, Hillary Clinton didn't win, but Hillary Clinton was.
She won the popular vote.
Coming after 8 years of Obama.
Exactly. And Bill Clinton won because he came after 8 years of Reagan. Right? Yeah. Like a friend of mine said this once. I think it was Pete David. It was someone over at.
How did she just get to say, well, of course they won after that? Like she just made a point, but that is completely contrary to the point that she was just trying to make. I don't understand how she claims that supported argument, but.
Brenna Ferris, who said this to me once, maybe it was even Nathan. That the candidate that wins every year, they characterize it as the most Jesus-like candidate. I would characterize it as the most like outsider sort of Messiah-y candidate. It's the person who was able to frame themselves as the biggest outsider wins.
I mean, if I agree that for the last like 20 or 30 years, like there is a tendency, there's like an anti-incumbent bias.
Right.
Where like the people want a change and so they vote for the other party.
Right. So the problem is that phenomenon gets confused with the sort of electoral viability of centrism. So Bill Clinton wins doing third way triangulation, basically running as a Republican who is from the South and pretends to be a black person because he's, you know, plays a saxophone or whatever. And that gets interpreted as third way neoliberal triangulation works. And the Democrats have been doing that for the last 40 years.
Didn't it work?
Well, no, because what we just described was that after eight years of one, we're going to get the other. That the person who there's a kind of incumbency disadvantage when it's one party has been empowered for a long time is blamed for everything that's going wrong in the world. And so whoever is on the other side is going to win. Like, we just agreed that that's the case, right? We just agreed that that's a phenomenon. And the problem.
I mean, I don't think it's like inevitable, but I think it's a tendency.
It's not necessary. I mean, sure, but we just agreed, did we not, that that's been the case for basically the last 40 years.
Yeah.
So that being said, it feels like what it seems like is the same people who elected Bill Clinton are still advising the Democratic Party. You got James Carville still on TV saying the same thing he's been saying since then, no matter how many times he's been proven wrong, no matter how many times Hillary loses to Obama and then Hillary loses to Donald Trump. Joe Biden, I would argue, narrowly wins in 2020, largely because of COVID and people's lack of faith that Donald Trump can manage this global crisis. And people feeling really endangered and their health is on the line and they just need someone normal and sensible back in the White House. And then you get a Joe Biden. And then you see how fragile that coalition around Joe Biden was 4 years later. Right?
Yes. Well, but so you seem to think that the solution to this is to like for if the Democrats pivot to the far left, that there's this like available
the far left
base. Well, by
is
Democratic
not supporting
Party
genocide
standards,
is far Democrats, left.
Oh, it's just about the genocide. The genocide. I thought she was saying Medicare for all and everything. No, it's the genocide. The genocide. The genocide. The genocide.
By Democratic Party standards.
Well, isn't that quite the admission?
Well,
isn't that quite the admission that we have a far right Democratic Party if something like ending a genocide is considered to be far left?
Well, I don't think necessarily that particular issue, but you've said. I mean, so
Medicare for all. Raising the minimum wage.
Oh my God.
I don't know. To be clear, I don't necessarily think any of that is far left, right? But like,
it's populist. It's centrist politics.
Yeah, but your position seems to be that like
centrist politics, Medicare for all.
There's this sort of like available untapped voter base that will manifest if the Democrats
do this right thing. There's no evidence for that.
Why doesn't that voter base manifest in the primaries? I guess is my question.
Well, you refuse to acknowledge the rigness of the primary.
Exactly. Yeah. It's rigged.
I don't know what to tell you.
That the primaries are rigged. But I just
Well, it's not my position. It's the people who rigged the primaries position. They're openly admitting it at this point, Natalie.
I feel the argument that the primaries are rigged is like, I feel like the evidence does not rise to a level where I feel like rigged is an appropriate description for what happened.
Well, how would you like, I use the phrase finger on the scale when I first brought this up in our conversation. Yeah. Oh, so, you know, I don't need to use the term.
Pretty sure she brought up rigged unprompted, which was what Natalie was pushing back against. But OK,
it's just a semantic issue that we don't have to use that word.
Like, OK, so again, to go back to 2020, like, OK, so there's a sort of minor conspiracy of center left candidates dropping out so that Joe Biden gets all of the voters available to that. That strategy simply would not work if the more progressive candidate, Bernie Sanders, had. If there were just simply more voters for the progressive candidate than there were for the center-left candidate. But that turned out not to be the case.
Yeah, I think, there's a few things that happen. As you are aware, many fewer people vote in primaries than in general elections, and it tends to be more plugged-in conventional media, mainstream media watching folks who are tuned into their MSNBC every day, and exactly the people who are getting the overwhelming message that someone like Bernie Sanders is not electable, which we know not to be true.
But this,
I mean,
this
in terms of the head-to-head polls,
this is a problem that ought to be solvable by generating energy to vote for more progressive candidates in primaries.
Okay,
right?
Now we're talking about the same thing.
If it's like Kamala Harris's fault that she lost in 2024, then isn't it also kind of Bernie Sanders' fault that he lost in 2020?
What do you mean? How do you mean?
Well, by failing to generate the energy or to
well, yes, but here's the problem. Here's the problem.
In South Carolina or whatever we think is the condition that Bernie had to meet to win.
The problem of how to overcome the media. And I don't want to overstate. I really want to say like $70 million worth of earned media that came out of Biden's South Carolina win. Like Bernie fundraised everybody in the race, but there's only so much you can do about the entire media infrastructure hailing Joe Biden as the king of the blacks and the ultimate winner of the election after winning one southern state that's a red state that actually has.
Oh, so now even the money and the. Wait, so the corporate donors don't matter? Or why would the donors matter and everything else if the money can't even help you win? Now you need the money and the media? Or I guess just the media and the money doesn't matter? Or what?
No bearing on the outcome of the general election, right? There's only, I mean, what to do about that is a huge problem that dovetails with our enormous media capture problem that we're dealing with right now with respect to Israel and Gaza. I will say that Israel and Gaza is demonstrating that despite the overwhelming control of the media by these corporate interests that are now explicitly owned by Zionists in too many outlets, in too many forms that I could count, that it hasn't managed to keep a grip on public opinion. So
Oh, so now the media and the money don't matter for some reason, I guess. It's just, okay.
It's a really interesting thing that we're seeing right now. Wow. For the first time, there's some kind of messaging that has...
So interesting. It's very interesting what we're seeing. Or maybe it's just the fact that your other analysis just literally never made sense ever. But okay.
Overcome the media. That being said, it's going to be a longer-term struggle for folks like Bernie Sanders, working within the Democratic Party especially, to figure out how not just to overcome the party's messaging. But the fact that they will never be able to be seen. I mean, right now, Natalie, you have a Green Party candidate for governor. It's a first to pass the post system, right? So it's not like a spoiler argument. It's a jungle primary. Mm-hmm. You had all the Democrats, the top three Democrats before Swalwell dropped out, polling at 10%. You had the Green Party candidate polling at 5%, and the Democratic Party sued to get him off the ballot because God forbid he actually participate in a debate. And the people of California, ostensibly our most liberal state, who would be open to something like this, actually hear someone who supports Medicare for all in Gaza. But they simply undemocratically sue to get you off the ballot to preclude Americans from even finding out about you. I heard you tell Joshua Citarella that you think there's something kind of masculine and sort of like a man coded about the antipathy toward the Democrats and people like Hillary Clinton and the kind of drive to be contrarian and vote green and what have you, which I, as one of the country's most famously hated Green Party voters. I took some issue to that, especially since I voted for very much a woman, Jill Stein, twice now, right? And Nina Turner is also a famously hated Green Party voter. Susan Sarandon is a famously hated Green Party voter.
No, I think that the Green Party is also somewhat feminine coded. I would agree with that because I mean, the concept of Green Party as being sort of initially like an environmentalist party, environmentalism is a feminine coded issue, right? So that's not necessarily what I was talking about. I guess, sorry, I still am tempted to bring this around because it does seem like, so it seems like when a center-left candidate like Kamala Harris loses a general election, you seem to place all the blame for it on them. When a more progressive candidate like Bernie Sanders loses a primary, you blame the media. I mean, like why is it not also sort of Bernie Sanders' fault for not,
well,
you know?
I think I did.
Why is it not also sort of the media's fault for Kamala Harris? I mean, the media did also obsessively focus on Joe Biden.
Well,
like, there's all kinds of things that you can say about. Yeah.
Okay, a couple of things. It's different when the media lies versus when the media tells the truth. And what the media, in fact, did with Joe Biden is run cover for him when he was in a clear state of decline going back to 2019, right? So if anything, the media
very
is...
extensive media coverage of Biden's declining health. In the year 2024.
True.
I am not one to want to promote Jake Tapper in any way, shape, or form, but co-written by my neighbor at the wall behind me, Alex Thompson, there's an entire book about the media cover-up.
You mean Mega Hillary yet?
Of Joe Biden's senility. And I remember covering this on Rising.
Yeah, just farming achievements.
It was very frustrating that every time that Joe Biden did something that was obviously reflective of his lapsing incompetence, mixing up the names of foreign leaders, walking out the wrong door, tripping all over the place, having these falls, that it was attributed to being a right-wing conspiracy theory. That was the actual language used that you were using. You were dealing with right-wing conspiracy theory.
The Democratic Party, right?
Yeah, in Democratic media with Democratic figures on Democratic media talking about Biden's senility. And in fact, going back to 2019, I'm sorry, listeners to the show, you've heard me say this a million times, but on the debate stage, Rising stars Cory Booker and Julian Castro had the temerity to point out that Joe Biden seemed not to remember what he had just been talking about on the debate stage in 2019. And when they called that out, Castro called it out on stage, and then they both said something about it in the spin room afterward. You didn't hear from either of them for another 4 years. And I still haven't heard from Castro. I don't know where he's, you know. And these were rising stars in the Democratic Party. These were going to be our Gen X presidents.
Yeah.
And now we're skipping them.
Well.
Isn't Booker a senator or whatever? What do you mean you didn't hear from him in 4 years? Or am I missing something or what?
You know, you get punished as they deserved. I mean, like, I'm not sitting here obviously rooting for Cory Booker or anything, but
I mean,
the fact that the Democratic Party would sideline, and this is conjecture here, this is just my observation, but seemingly that there would be more consequences for calling out Joe Biden's senility at a time when it could have been avoided as a consequence for the party than there is for actually being the senile person who puts America in the position of a second Donald Trump term strikes me as a little backward, no?
Well, I agree with you that a lot of blame for this does rest on with the Democrats. Like, I am not a conspiracist about why Democrats lose elections. Like, I don't think there is a conspiracy necessarily against Joe Biden. I mean, but it seems like it does seem like it's a little bit what you're saying when it comes to discussing like why Bernie Sanders can't win a Democratic primary.
No.
Like,
to be clear, I don't think that Bernie can't win, and I think that he should have anticipated what was going to happen. That there was going to be coordination. That was something that was anticipated. That they were going to try to leverage the black vote against him and use South Carolina the way they did. All of that should have been anticipated. But it is also fair to acknowledge that is an extremely
that they were going to leverage the black vote against him. That they were going to... So what did she mean when she said that? That the black vote matters in the Democratic primary? Is that what she means? That
it's anticipated all day and night. And it's an extremely high barrier that he had to overcome. That a candidate that was not a threat to the healthcare industry, the private insurance industry, the weapons manufacturing industry, the oil and gas industry, etc., would not have had to face.
On some level, I think that's true. On some level, some of it also just simply the product of like Bernie Sanders having been a party, like an outsider to the party, having been an independent in Vermont. I mean, I just think that like there's a limit to how much of this you can attribute to that when like it is ultimately the popular vote that he is unable to win. I mean, you can blame it on media bias to a certain extent, perhaps. But
that's the whole point of the quote unquote rigging of the first election. It's not the popular vote, that the delegate counts were rigged, that he won every county in West Virginia and didn't get any of those delegates. I mean, that's what we're talking about when we're talking about the rigging. That it was not a popular vote issue. And moreover, if we wanted popular vote democratic reforms.
That you don't get, I don't think you get delegates based on winning counties for primaries. I think they were winner take all primary. This, she's kind of trying to mix up the votes and then like the super delegate shit, and it's ugh.
You would do things like support ranked choice voting so that the spoiler candidate issue that frequently causes people not to vote for someone like Bernie because they think he's quote unquote unelectable would no longer be at play.
Well,
the Democrats oppose ranked choice voting.
Yeah.
And when it's passed by ballot measure, I think in Maine it was passed some years back, Democrats work to overturn it against the popular will because they know that it's a threat to vote blue no matter who, which is the only way they ever get any support, given that they won't support popular policy.
I mean, I support ranked choice voting. I mean, I would love to get rid of this predicament that we're in, right? But like, I just, at the end of the day, we're having like a debate between the losers and we're stuck with Donald Trump.
I don't see us as being at the end of history. We're not at the end of history, but I think frankly it's funny that like the left gets characterized as like nihilistic. You've characterized yourself as nihilistic or despondent or, you know, both here and in your recent chat with Joshua Citarella. And every time you said that, I would kind of smile because, you know, I don't see myself that way. And I, in fact, you know, you were kind of claiming the term pragmatism. I see myself as a pragmatist. I see myself as a pragmatist insofar as not kicking Lucy's football again is the pragmatic choice. And you could say to me, well, how do you know there's another football to kick? Well, I don't. Truthfully, I don't. But I know that Lucy is going to pull it.
How is voting for a third party not its own kind of kicking Lucy's football again? Like, again, like if since like Ralph Nader and Y2K, like voting third party has sort of failed to shift the Democratic Party to left. It's failed to.
Right.
And the Democratic Party
here's why.
Failed to,
here's why.
To elect anyone.
Why?
Right.
Here's why. I hear you asking that question and I have not responded to it. I haven't responded to it as specifically as I should have. So let me do that. It is not enough to simply divest from the Democratic Party or to vote third party and to not frame the reason as why. To stay home. That's not sufficient. Here's why.
Okay.
Democrats, part of the Democratic Party propaganda is to characterize non-voters and Green Party voters in such a way as to insulate themselves from having to be responsive to those voters and moving in the direction of those voters and get away from the direction of their donor base, right? So this is the whole thing we're talking about with Uncommitted and the obviousness of the role of Gaza and why they won't release probably the DNC autopsy report. But this has been the case since a long time before Gaza. If the public were to wake up to the fact that elections are winnable, and in fact are winnable by FDR numbers where you're winning every single state by Democrats,
if you're just
Democrats are declining to do so, that's a crisis for the credibility of the party as a whole, right? So what they do historically is to say they vilify Green Party voters. They say Jill Stein's a Putinist. They vilify national heroes like Ralph Nader, who saved so many lives with his consumer advocacy around the seatbelt and car safety and all those kinds of things. They make these people into a pariah. You get people like Mehdi Hasan and like I remember Samantha Bee in 2016, a week out from the election, doing weird screeds against Green Party. AOC did it this last time around. Weird, unasked for screeds against the smear Green Partiers, as opposed to trying to win votes and talking about why Kamala was actually good.
Aren't you just describing campaigning? Doing hits against your electoral opponents is part of campaigning, right? And like you certainly do hits against more mainstream Democrats, right?
I think campaigning is more than that. Talking about why your electoral
opponents. It is more than that.
This came up in your.
Of course, it's more than that, but it's part of it. Nice.
Why your opponents.
This came up in your conversation with
better choice
with Joshua. I think it was really interesting because you were talking about like the right wing online influence machine versus the left influence machine, and like why does the right have more influence? Why are they, you know, why are they more persuasive? And you've brought up in this conversation a couple of times, like why is Trump more persuasive? And how like you have been doing counter programming for all of these years, right? But that you are sort of, and you're increasingly pessimistic about sort of the reach of that counter programming because you know a lie goes around the world twice before the truth gets out of the door or whatever. There was a name that you used to describe this phenomenon sort of with a B that I can't remember.
Brandolini's law.
Brandolini's law. Okay, right, like, because of Brandolini's
like,
law.
It takes, like 10 times the effort to debunk bullshit than it does to generate it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I was listening to that part of the conversation with interest because my belief, and that's just, you know, my belief, is that that is true, but that the way you counter the OG programming is with your own OG programming. You have to change the conversation and shift it to territory that is more advantageous to you. So I agree with you that the Democrats are sort of fighting an uphill battle when they say, no, really, I'm a better candidate on immigration because you're fighting immigration is the right issue and the rights issue. And they are trusted more on immigration than Democrats. Same with trans issues. You know, saying, you know, no, actually, I'm going to throw trans people under the bus. One, it's immoral. Two, no one's going to believe you. So like, why even play in that sandbox? What you have to do is redefine the conversation around things that people care about even more than whether one of five trans, you know, middle schoolers gets to play on the girls' soccer team. You have to talk about something like, I don't know, Medicare for all, which is an overwhelmingly popular issue, right? And so I think that all of this stuff in the electability is dovetailing together. It's Democrats are playing in these cultural sandboxes where they're going to lose precisely. They know that they're kind of losing on trans. They know that they're not going to convince anybody that they're better, on, quote unquote, better on immigration than Republicans. But they won't take the easy layup that's right there. And why? Why, Natalie, would a Democratic candidate, knowing that Medicare for all is an 88% issue with Democratic voters and a 49% issue with Republican voters and a 60-something% issue with independents, not run hard on the most popular issue in America years after a global pandemic? Why not?
Well, because, I mean, if it's such a slam dunk, I just don't understand why. I mean, I just keep going back to why does Bernie Sanders not win Democratic primaries?
Like, but that's not the right question, Natalie. The question is why did Bernie Sanders manage to come out of an obscurity and be a front runner in two back-to-back elections in the first place?
Front runner?
Yes, the
evidence is not that he lost. The miracle is that he almost won. And frankly, the miracle is that he managed to out-fundraise every other person in the race, even though they were taking money from billionaires.
But why is that a miracle if there's such like widespread popular support?
Because, well, it's not a miracle. It's evidence of the popular support is what I'm trying to argue. It's evidence of the fact that there is, in fact, this unwedded appetite, this appeal to popular population of people who are waiting for someone they can vote affirmatively for instead of just hold their nose for. And the Democrats are saying, absolutely not. We will do anything and everything in our power to make sure someone like Bernie doesn't win. And that's why I'm not especially sanguine about the primary prospects in 2028, though I hope to be proven wrong.
Well, we'll see. I guess, again, a lot of what you're saying are things that I think are like are completely within the realm of like reasonable debate to be had about like what democratic strategy ought to be. I guess it's just a little bit difficult for me to take when it comes from someone who does not support the Democrats in the elections anyway.
Ooh.
Well, I'm not the only one making this argument. Chris Hedges makes this argument. Cornel West makes this argument. Right. House of Piker is increasingly making this argument, although he's still, for the most part, pretty down for a Democratic candidate.
Many of these people are sort of abandoned Harris people, right? I guess I think these are reasonable arguments to be had here. But I just think that it feels like slightly disingenuous to me to be being like, oh, here's what Democrats have to do to win. Here's what Democrats have to do to win. When also spending at the same time a bunch of effort on helping, on making sure that Democrats don't win to whatever.
No, Democrats, yeah. Democrats could put egg on my face tomorrow. I dare Democrats, humiliate me, embarrass me, prove me wrong, destroy my priors, make me look like the biggest fool and the wrongest person in the world.
By adopting all of my political beliefs as policy.
By getting behind a populist left candidate in 2028.
Yeah.
Well, prove me wrong.
We'll see.
It's up to
primary voters. It just is.
I would love, it's not, unfortunately, it's not. Because by your own admission, we haven't had a primary in at least 8 years. Since
In at least 8 years. Oh, she doesn't count the one with Biden because that was rigged. And the one with Hillary, that was rigged. It's fucking retarded.
We had a primary in 2020.
No, rigged.
Right. We did. I'm sorry, we did. We were in denial about this.
Okay, that was 6 years ago. So in at least six years.
Yes, I agree. I agree that 2024 was a catastrophe in a number of ways. I do think it would have been better with a primary.
So just to be clear, Natalie, you think it's normal? You think it's like... When Joe Biden doesn't win Iowa, he comes like fourth or fifth in New Hampshire. He loses Nevada, like third or fourth place. And Bernie wins arguably all of those, although the Iowa contested, blah, blah, blah. You think that it is, and then Biden wins one state. You know, others have been doing better. Everyone's been doing better than Biden. He wins one state. It's a red state that has absolutely no bearing on his electability writ large.
Like what? Does she think that the Democratic establishment just really wanted Biden? Even if he wouldn't have been more electable? I guess the argument is going to be because the corporate donors wanted Biden early. Why wouldn't the corporate donors just choose somebody more electable if Biden was doing so horrible? I don't know. I don't even know.
And the media hails him as the inevitable winner. And subsequently, all of the candidates who had been performing better than him up until that point in those three subsequent primaries drop out. That doesn't strike you as a sort of coordinated prioritization of the Democratic Party stopping Bernie?
Could you be specific about what it is that you're implying?
I'm saying very expressly, in a way that has been reported out and is not even conjecture at this time, that the Democratic Party decided, Barack Obama picked up a phone, told everybody else to drop out of the race and coalesce behind Biden to stop Bernie from winning. This is so far from the realm of conspiracy theory, the strategy
would not work if Bernie had the capacity to win over a center-left candidate without that vote being split.
Yeah, I agree, but that's not the exact question that I'm asking. Now we're litigating the quote-unquote riggedness of the primary.
Yes, that we are.
Right, because we're now in this little bit of a conversation about how long has it been since we've had a real primary, because you're saying that the voters get to decide. That the primary
I think that's a real primary.
Decide.
I mean, like, again, candidates are entitled to maneuver and try to drop out. It's fairly normal behavior for, like, rival candidates to at some point drop out and support. I mean, again, candidates who are more aligned will tend to...
So candidates that are doing better than their other candidates to drop out and support a poorer performing candidate, you think that's a regular course of action?
Why would they even do that? Like, why wouldn't the corporate donors just choose the more popular performing candidate?
Why do you think that candidates who are doing better would drop out?
Yeah.
Because they're promised the Secretary of Transportation.
But why wouldn't, if the other candidates were more popular and were doing better, why wouldn't Biden just drop out and be promised a cabinet position?
Okay. But like,
and they got it.
But Biden did win, right?
And they're promised support from the Democratic Party when they run for election in the next cycle, which Pete Buttigieg will get.
Sure.
He's going to be the chosen one because he played ball. I just interviewed a congressional candidate who's running against Richie Torres, who says that one of the big Democratic donors came up to him and said exactly that you're very promising. We'll support you in an election down the line, but can you drop out so we can coalesce behind the moderate candidate in this race?
So you're saying this is not like all kinds of maneuvering goes on in any kind of election, but you're saying this is not a real primary. I mean, what do you
is that
a
democracy?
Real primary?
Is that a democratic choice being made by the electorate? A transparent democratic choice that is being presented to the electorate? Or is it a skewed choice that is being skewed by not just the media, but by the Democratic Party, who has argued in court that it has a right to rig its own primaries?
Well, rig in what sense?
Have superdelegates.
That's what they argued in 2016.
Doesn't even want to say it. Oh, wait, will she say it?
No obligation to hold a fair contest, that they're allowed to get behind candidates, that they did in fact get behind Hillary Clinton, and that there were
is she talking about superdelegates?
Under no obligation to do otherwise.
But getting behind Hillary Clinton does not, again, voters still have the opportunity, have the capacity to vote against Hillary Clinton, right? She won the popular vote by 3 million votes in the 2016 primary.
I think we're going around. I don't know that
like
I'm going
to... How much
I'm going to be able to persuade you this. I would just say that I would hope that knowing that Bernie in every single poll was in no never at any point at any risk of losing to Donald Trump, knowing what
polls.
A threat Donald Trump was likely to be and has proven to be, I personally would have a lot more irritation for Hillary Clinton for promoting Trump as a Pied Piper candidate, which we learned from the Podesta emails. And I would have a lot of ire for the Democratic Party, who looked at those polls, knew that Hillary Clinton was a risk case, and got behind her at the same time. And I would have a lot of frustration for the liberal media, which pretended like Hillary Clinton was the more electable candidate, than I would for leftists who allegedly don't want to wield power.
Well, I have no grudge whatsoever.
Okay, this is a retarded.